This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting, scientifically proven to be three times more entertaining than waxing your grandmother.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, what do you want from me now?
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is, yes, it is the Ron Van Dam Show. Don't argue with me. I'm not in the mood. Yes, and I am Ron Van Dam. My name is in the title of the program, so that kind of makes sense. If I were in a police lineup, I'd be the one all the way on the left, just in case that happens. And other than that, have a nice day. I'll see you tomorrow. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait, I forgot to do the actual show. I'll do that now. All right, that's enough. That'll be enough. Thank you. How are you? How you doing? Don't talk back to me. See, this is like a one-way thing. It's not a Zoom conference. So if you talk back to me, I can't hear you. And that's the way it should be in life. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But it's not, so we deal with it. How are you? Good to be with you. How are you making out so far in this new year of, what is this, 2027? What is this? Oh, it's 2023. Oh, I don't follow that too much. I have a calendar, but I don't really refer to it at all. It has on the calendar all the things I must do, but I fail to put them in the proper box of what date it is. So now I know what I have to do. I just don't know when to do them. I've started to, I got to say this quietly. I'm going to be quiet about this. I have the Alexa thing all over my house. And there she is. She heard me. All right, Alexa, stop. Just cut it out. Alexa, stop. God. What a pain in the ass. She's very convenient when I want to know what the weather is, but otherwise, just leave me alone. Sometimes I'll just be talking on the phone or something, and I don't even say her name, and she'll respond to me like I'm talking to her. Oh, so typical. So typical. That's very sexist, what I just said, by the way. But accurate. Anyway, So, I have a very interesting guest on today's program. I won't be doing as much talking as I usually do. Look, here come the party balloons. All right, fine. She's an author and has written an incredibly interesting book with a different twist on it. And so we're going to talk to her momentarily. I like fascinating people for a couple of reasons. One is because, well, they're fascinating by definition. And secondly, I don't have to talk that much. Because they're so fascinating that I really have nothing to say because they're more fascinating than I am. But it doesn't make a difference. I can still drift off in my mind. I tell people this, and I think they're starting to understand. I go to the movies once a week because with COVID, I couldn't go anywhere. So now, you know, and now that I can sit amongst people, I still wear a mask every once in a while in a movie theater, depending on who's sitting next to me or if somebody's coughing. I always have it handy, and I always will. And I should have done that since the day I was born. Anyway, so I go to the movies. It's $5 on Tuesdays. How can you not go to a movie for $5? $5 is like going to the dollar store five times. Who doesn't do that? So I go, and I don't care what movie I'm seeing. As a matter of fact, the longer the movie, the better, because it's going to be ultimately boring. But I'm in a place where there's very big comfortable chairs, and it's dark inside, and I fall asleep. I get such a good night's sleep in like 2.5 hours when I go to the movies. And when people say to me, Ron, what movie did you see? How was it? I say, I don't know. I don't know what movie I saw. That has nothing to do with it. Do you eat popcorn and stuff? No, I'm not there to eat popcorn. I'm there to get some sleep. What are you talking about? The chairs in these movie theaters these days, I don't know where you live. I don't know who you are. And I like it that way. I don't know what kind of chairs you have in your movie theater. The one that I go to, oh my God, these chairs, holy, it's worth $5 just to sit in a chair for 2.5 hours. It's an incredible chair. The front goes up, you know, and you can put your legs up. Oh my God. And the back like is very, very comfortable. There's like the aisles are huge. You could throw a bachelor party in the aisle of these movie theaters right in front of that comfortable chair. I love it. I'll tell you a funny story, but it's not that funny. I'll tell you up front, it's not that funny, but to me it was funny. I went to the movies by myself. Oh, God, it was probably a couple of years ago. It was before the Covina thing. And I was watching the movie and, you know, trying to get some sleep. And I'm sitting there and the movies, they're showing the trailers. Coming attractions, but they're technically called trailers. Would trailers come after the movie? Isn't trailer something that you put on after the cab? You know what I mean? Why is a trailer up front before the main part? I never understood that terminology. Anyway. So they're showing the coming attractions and all that kind of stuff. And I watch a little bit of that because it's, you know, it's like starting to put me to sleep. So it's nice. It's lulling me to sleep because I don't care about the coming attractions because I don't really watch the movies anyway. So I put the chair I put my feet up to the point where the chair is actually now a day bed. I am lying horizontal. A dentist could come in and do dental work on me. I am so horizontal. They could perform a surgical operation because I am so horizontal and also groggy and looking forward to getting some sleep during the long movie. So I'm sitting there and in the theater that I go to, you when you're paying for the ticket out in the lobby, you choose your seat. You do it there. So you don't just go in the movie theater and sit down in a seat. They're all reserved seats every time of day. And I have my favorite location in the movie theater where I can get the most sleep. So I'm sitting there and I'm in a horizontal position. And all of a sudden, this very attractive woman, it's hard in movie theaters to see how attractive people really are because it's so dimly lit. That's to my benefit in that sense. So she looks quite attractive, and she sits down in the chair next to me because that was the assigned seat that she paid for in the lobby. And fine, and we you know, you don't talk to these people. You don't talk to the person sitting next to you in a movie theater. It's just not done. You don't say, hey, how you doing? Looking forward to watching a movie. You don't start a conversation with a complete stranger in a movie theater unless something's wrong. She sits down next to me. And within about 30 seconds, she's making herself comfortable in her cushy chair right next to me. We're actually sharing the armrest almost. And all of a sudden, she hits this button on the side of her chair, and she starts floating into a horizontal position herself. Here I am, basically lying in bed with an attractive woman right next to me, and we're both lying in a horizontal position like we're lying in bed together. An armrest is the only thing that makes that different. I wouldn't say that I was aroused. I wouldn't say it publicly. And I wasn't necessarily aroused, but it could have been. Needless to say, I did not sleep during... actually watched the movie because I just may believe I'm watching a movie with a complete attractive stranger lying in bed with me. That's what it felt like. It was kind of nice. I don't know. Oh yeah. that happens every once in a while, doesn't it? These little parts of life that you don't expect that actually have nowhere to go, but they're just like pleasantly surprising me. Ron, did you go to the movies yesterday? Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Did you go with anybody? I think I did. I was lying in bed with this complete stranger next to me. We were watching a movie in a movie theater. Ron, I don't understand what you're talking about. It's not important. Thank you anyway for asking. My guest is going to join us momentarily, and that's what's going to happen. But before we do that, we're going to take a short commercial break because someone has to pay for this. Obviously, you're not going to do that, so...
Gentlemen, have you ever been in the mood for a nice knish or maybe bagel in the schmear, but you're also in the mood for some exotic dancing? You can't find those in the same place. Until now. I'm Moishe Kaufman, inviting you to come visit us at Moishe's Knish and Strippers, the area's first genuine kosher deli and titty bar. Come in and rock out with your locks out and check out our dancers. These girls are so nice you'll plots, and they're all certified kosher. Maybe not the kind of girl you bring home to mother, but once you see Delia fold a dollar bill without using her hands, you won't care what mom thinks. Look, Bubby, you're in a strip club. That alone is enough to kill her, so live a little. Every Thursday, don't miss our buns and brisket buffet from noon to 6. Moishe's Knish and Strippers is closed on the Sabbath. Hey, we might be a little unorthodox, but we're not heathens.
Annika Savoy joins us now. She's got a new book called The Ghost in Her. And this is part of a series, Annika, is that correct?
That's right. It's called the Ungilded series. And this is book one. And I chose the name Ungilded because it's about the Gilded Age. But it doesn't focus on the super rich people like the Rockefellers and J.P. Yes. Morgans and whatnot. It focuses on the working class, the blue collar and immigrant people of New York City, of the Bowery District in 1888.
Wow, that's a different twist on that.
Yes.
Yeah. This is of great interest to me because I lived for a good number of years in the area of the subject matter that we're talking about. I lived in Jackson Heights, and I used to go to I worked in Astoria and Long Island City. So, this is Blackwell's Island. Some people may not be familiar with the exact location. It's not called Blackwell's Island anymore, is it?
No, it's not. My husband and I took the ferry from Manhattan to Blackwell's Island, which is now called Roosevelt Island.
Ah.
It's named after FDR. So when you go to the island, it's very pastoral, very peaceful place. And there's walking trails and some abandoned buildings from left over from the late 1800s when it was called Blackwell's Island. And it was a place really of banishment where, you know, all the outcasts of New York City were sent to Blackwell's Island. It's not a place you want to go. There was a lunatic asylum there, the New York Lunatic Asylum. There was a prison there, a smallpox hospital, an almshouse. So it was basically where they put the people that the infrastructure couldn't handle. And in the case of my book, the heroine, who is a poor Irish immigrant, has this gift of being a seer. She comes from a long line of Irish seers who often were mislabeled as witches. So she kept this psychic gift of hers, the ability to see ghosts and fairies and all that Celtic magic. She kept it to herself because she was fully aware that back then there was the danger of being called a witch or being called crazy and being carted off to a lunatic asylum, which unfortunately happens to our dear heroine, Maggie O'Connor, in The Ghost in Her. Yeah, she's shipped off to the lunatic asylum on Blackwell's Island and has to figure out a way to escape.
Interesting. There'd be a lot of television shows that would be sent to the island these days. There's like there's like 50 Supernatural shows. Now it's part of entertainment.
Exactly.
There was a time when that was considered pure evil, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, in Ireland, the last witch that was burned was in Tipperary in 1895. So, you know, we think of women being killed for being different, as the witch trials of Salem in the late 1600s, early 1700s, or we think of, that happened before in time. But when this book takes place in 1888, there were women that were still burned for being witches.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So this is it's fiction based on real life situations. In other words, we're putting people in historical situations.
Yeah, I love doing that because, you know, my belief is that every good story has an arc, and it starts with the main character. Who is this main character? Why should I care about them? And then the character, or in the case of historical romance, which this also has that feel to it as well, that they have obstacles in front of them. And the book unfolds with the presentation of these obstacles and how the obstacles are overcome to achieve that happily ever after ending. So I use that arc of the story, underdog character who's so poor she literally lives in a hole. She lives underground beneath a tenement in the Bowery District of New York City. Yeah. And she's always cold. She's always hungry. She's dressed in rags. And at the end of the book, she is a relatively well-to-do woman, happily married. You know, it's all of those traditional endings that we love. And it traces her journey on how she went from being the girl in the hole, which is part one of the book, to the girl in the madhouse, which is part two of the book. And part three is liberation, how she overcame those obstacles.
Wow. It's got everything in it there, Annika.
It does. It you know what? It even has Andrew Carnegie.
Oh my God! That's it now.
I know.
Come on.
You know, I've got to tell you, Ron. I wrote this book. I also write nonfiction under the name Ann K. Howard. And, you know, I've written true crime. I got to know a serial killer.
Oh,
and I wrote history. Yes. And then I recently wrote a book about Ukrainian refugees escaped from Mariupol. So, you know, when I started this book, I was writing a nonfiction about false confessions. And it was at the start of the pandemic. And I was like, just so weighed down by the heaviness and seriousness of what I was writing about, that I thought, you know what, I'm just going to drop this project for now and have fun with an escapist paranormal historical romance. Yeah, so you're going to find, like, even though the subject matter is dark and gritty, there's also kind of a whimsical comic element to this book. It's like, you can tell as I'm writing, I'm not taking it too seriously because I want to entertain the reader. I want the reader to escape.
Interesting. You write about the paranormal quite a bit. I believe and I don't believe. If I had a situation where I saw something, I would believe. And certainly it's a popular topic because of all the television shows, documentary or based on or whatever. Do you have supernatural experiences yourself?
I do. I've had a handful of supernatural experiences, which it's strange because when I went to law school, I practiced law for 20 years before retiring to write full time. And so there's like two sides of me, Ron. There's the side that is very fact-based, logical, and skeptical. And I'm just like you. I'm skeptical of these things. But I can't deny, on the other hand, that I have had a handful of experiences that indicated to me that there is something else out there. And one in particular was my near-death experience when I was 17 years old, and I was hit by a car when I was riding to work, riding my bike to work. And, you know, I flipped up in the high in the air, went bang down on the hood, flipped up again, went bang on the on the concrete. And I don't remember any of that, but what I do remember was I don't remember my bike hitting the car, but certainly afterwards when I saw the bike, it looked like an accordion. So it must have hit it pretty hard. And during that time, you know, it was like my spirit, my soul, whatever you want to call it, my ghost, the old name, the ghost in her, it separated from my body. My body was no longer attached to it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just my mind. It wasn't just, you know, I think, therefore I am. It wasn't just Annika's mind. Mm-hmm. It was rather like I felt like an old soul. And I was surrounded by this static buzzing. And the most important aspect was that there was no time. That really struck me, that I was outside of time. And I don't know how else to describe it. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of like a timeless moment. And I felt such peace. I felt such love. And then next thing I know, I open my eyes and a crowd of people is surrounding me. And I hear the ambulance coming.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're not the only one that has a similar experience in that sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we all, I mean, that's amazing, but I think we all grasp for explanations of all of this. And mm-hmm. I mean, just like religion, supernatural is like spiritual. You know, it's
yeah.
And it's another form of comfort, I suppose, but at the same time, very real to a lot of people.
Right, right. And you can't get too carried away with it, in my opinion, right. Because then you get into that kind of crazy zone.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in some people's minds, it's crazy zone. Right. Other people's, it's not. anyway, let me ask you a question. There's Rikers Island, which is kind of just, not just down the street, but very close to this particular asylum. Different mm-hmm. though in that sense, right? Those two locations.
Yeah, the Blackwell's Island was I guess you could say more humanitarian based. Uh-huh. And that's all relative when I say that. You know, it was where the homeless went and the poor went and the sick went. But you know, even though Rikers Island, you know, had the prisons and still does, the Blackwell's Island was arguably just a savage of a place, because, you know, I go into the customs of this lunatic asylum, and it was really barbaric because, you know, back then, of course, psychiatrists or psychologists, they were called alienists. And when you read about their diagnoses and their understanding of the human mind and mental illness, it's a lot of it's quackery, and I would say it kind of falls into two categories. The first is that it's very much based on being demon possessed and Christian thinking. So they were labeling all of these religious terms mm-hmm. on mental illness, like say schizophrenia or bipolar, you know. But also it was very oppressive to women, and the psychology or psychiatry of that time really reflected that kind of patriarchal thinking, where a lot of it was based on woman's body parts, her uterus.
Yeah.
And a woman had hysteria. Sure. It was like these women were scary to men, you know, and so they would attribute it somehow to the female gender and the fragility and kind of emotional hysteria of women in general.
Yeah, it's amazing how much we didn't understand about ourselves, and it wasn't all that long ago that we're
Isn't
talking
it?
About.
I'm amazed that really modern day medicine didn't really begin as a science, a true science, mm-hmm. until the late 1800s, you know, when they started making discoveries for the cures of diseases like mm-hmm. smallpox and polio and all of that. But before that, it was really anecdotal. It was based on the country doctor coming to your house saying, yeah, I had another family that had similar things, and then just kind of putting the same anecdotal label on what you had.
Mm. Amazing. Yeah, I mean, timing is everything as far as our social experiences.
Can you imagine how I would think if I lived in the late 1800s I would be dead by now. I probably would have died of one of many, many things I had in my youth or my adulthood involved that required antibiotics.
Sure.
You know, they didn't have antibiotics. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And the surgeries were quite barbaric. I mean, just even the idea of washing your hands and keeping the surgery table clean and wiping it down between surgeries.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, if we had COVID back in that time, we'd have a very sparse population.
We really would. Yeah. We really would. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then there's a social aspect of it where now we protect people, we feel for everybody. Back then, there was only a select few that really had any kind of freedom. I mean, it was an amazing difference in such a short
time. Yeah, and that is exactly what I try to bring out in the book, is that, you know, for the poor underbelly living in the Bowery District, because the Bowery District in the late 1800s, that was just before Ellis Island was created for immigrants to go to. So people got dropped off from all these different countries, Ireland, Germany, China. They got dropped off at Battery Park, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And so, you know, just up the street was the tenement district of the Bowery. So it was really the Bowery at the turn of the century in New York City was a quintessential melting pot. Of Americans, and they were all poor and mostly very ambitious. But, you know, we think that the American dream happened when they arrived here. The reality is, in most cases, it didn't. The disparity of wealth and poverty was, well, one could argue, just like it is today. You know, we had our Elon Musks, our Carnegies, and we also had our people who were slaving away in the factories.
Sure did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now we drop people off at Martha's Vineyard. So I guess
things or in front of the vice president's house. Right, yeah, wherever.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a change.
Okay. Well, I know, you know, and I thought, you know, we could maybe start a new Black Walls Island and send all of the outcasts there, right? But the East River was wonderful to keep Manhattan safe because the currents of that river are so strong. And even though I think it's only like 3/4 of a mile from Manhattan to Black Walls Island, it was really impossible for people to escape and swim back to, you know, Manhattan because of the dangerous currents of the East River.
Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, I could fill the island with politicians right now, but we won't, we won't go into that. All right. It is a fascinating book, and it does have a little bit and a lot of bit of everything based on real history. And it does go, as you've heard by the conversation, goes a lot deeper than simply the storyline plot line.
So, yeah, I did. I did a ton of research as I was writing the book. That's where I find my inspiration, is through research. And then I just kind of skipped off the cliff and went into paranormal land with the foundation of a well-researched book. So, you know, this book is for any historical romance, paranormal historical romance lover who wants a little more substance. You know, they want to write on Goodreads, this was not accurate, or this is accurate, or, you know, this is a more substantial paranormal historical romance.
Excellent. The book's available everywhere, I hope.
Yes, okay. It is. Like, you, if you go on Amazon or the publisher's website, Inkspell Publishing, but it's on Amazon, The Ghost in Her by Annika Savoy. Great. And I'm going to get back to work on book two, Mayhem in Disguise, which will be a little bit of a vampire story.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and that will come out in December of next year.
It's interesting. You keep it topical and at the same time put it in a different place. I like that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a movie addict. Every night I'm either watching a TV series on Netflix or Amazon or HBO, or I'm watching movies. And I love horror. I love the paranormal. I love turn of the century. So I'm just kind of contributing to that story that people are wanting to hear right now.
Very cool. Well, again, it's Annika Savoy, A-N-I-K-A Savoy. Is there a website?
AnnikaSavoyAuthor.com.
Perfect. Hope we speak to you when your next book comes out.
It was a pleasure. Good. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks a lot, Ron.
Take care. Well, that'll do it for me today. That was pretty cool. Thank you to my guests, and thank you to you for dropping by. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.